Hello and welcome to Object Matters, the podcast of the Chow Chak Wing Museum at the University of Sydney. My name's Craig Barker and I'm the Head of Public Engagement at the museum. And in this podcast, Object Matters, what I'm aiming to do is to talk to my colleagues at the museum and across the university about their relationship with art, objects and materiality, and their relationship with particular objects in the museum collection. Today my guest is my colleague, Dr. Susha Shen, the curator of the China Gallery at the Chow Chak Wing Museum. And today we're going to be exploring two different works in the collection by two contemporary artists. Welcome, Susha. Before I ask you some questions, I'm just going to briefly introduce you to our listeners. You've got a remarkable background, and we'll explore this a little bit more, but you've been working within museums and galleries for over a decade. You've got a PhD from the Australian National University and a background in art history here at the University of Sydney and also for the Sydney College of the Arts. You've been curating, publishing and teaching Asian art both here in Australia and internationally for quite some time now. You are, of course, curator of our current exhibition, Auspicious Motifs in Chinese Art, which we'll talk about in a moment. And you're currently working on a number of books, one of which is specifically about Chinese toggles. Thank you for joining us, Susha. I guess, could you talk a little bit more about your role specifically with the Chow Chak Wing Museum and what you're engaging with?
Thank you, Craig, for your generous introduction, and thank you for having me here today to share some of my research in the objects within our collection. I am the curator of China Gallery. I'm responsible for curating the exhibitions, researching and developing the collection, particularly related to China, and delivering the knowledge to different communities. Before joining the museum, that I have, as you mentioned, I have been working as a curator, researcher, and educator for over a decade in art, culture, and education sector. My research interests are cultural networks in Asian art, socialist and post-socialist visual culture, photography history in Greater China, and also curatorial practice in Asia.
I mean, it's interesting. I mentioned in the introduction the varied elements of your career so far and the types of things you've been involved in. And it's interesting to hear, you know, your interest in things like photography and so on. It's kind of interesting, isn't it? Because it's really a couple of decades now since a real interest in the West about art from China, and certainly the art market has changed to reflect this as well too. Do you see yourself as part of a generation of scholars that is really trying to examine and question what is motivating artists in China?
Indeed. It is definitely increasing. There are increasing interest in this subject matter, given the boom of museum building, as well as particularly contemporary Chinese art, not just in China, not just within the Asian region, but globally.
Internationally.
So this is also part of my interest to see the contemporary art production, exhibition making as a tool of history making, as well as the cultural network around this exhibition and art production.
Could you give our listeners a bit of an idea of the size of the collection within the Chow Chak Wing Museum of work from China and more broadly from Eastern Asia anyway?
Yeah, we have, compared to a lot of public museums in Australia, they have been collecting for more than a century. The Chow Chak Wing Museum, we do have a really strong focus on East Asia art. We have about more than 3,000 objects related to Asia, and probably about 2,000 particularly related to East Asia. Yes. And this including in the art collection, the Nicholson collection, as well as the Maclay collections.
So today, from those more than 3,000 works and items, you've chosen two. What are the two works that we're going to focus on for Object Matters?
I have chosen two works. They are all photocopied works. One is from Chinese-Australian artist Linty Lee's 1987 work titled Untitled 3, after Antonello de Messina, and Chinese artist Wang Youxin's 1990 work, Portrait Series Document 1.
Now, I find it interesting. We'll talk about both of these pieces individually first and then contextualise them. And I have a lot of questions for you about photocopying art a little bit later on as well. But before we do, I think let's break them down and talk about each piece. And of course, listeners can see images of both on our website. But let's begin with Lindy Lee's piece, Untitled Free. Could you describe the work to our listeners?
Yeah, you probably wouldn't be able to count properly, but Lindy Lee's Untitled 3 after Antonello di Messina consists of 16 panels of black and white photocopied image of Francesco Vitali, a powerful Sicilian bishop and humanist, painted in the 15th century by one of the most famous early Italian Renaissance painter, Antonello di Messina. Each panel is about 28 by 21 centimeter.
Yeah.
The work pans across the wall in two rows. The black and white color of each iteration of these images of the famous painting fades in the sequence. And for Ragnarsson's work, it is 35 times 25 centimeter paperwork as well, a bit bigger than a 4A paper. And within the work, you could see a lot of photocopied line drawings of figures from the back of a Tang dynasty, which is around 11th century. The Dao De Xuanqing, a Taoist script, was found in the library cave of the Mogul Grottoes in Dunhuang in China. These figures, as you could see here, include the Buddha's different Buddha's hand gestures, the Guanyin, which is the goddess of mercy, and guardians of the Buddha, Jingang Li Shi, which is Mandarin or Neo in Japanese. Overlaying these images is some wild cursive style calligraphy. I could not identify which calligrapher produce this calligraphy. By the style, it is possibly from Tang Dynasty Buddhist and calligrapher Huai Su. For audience, if you have any clue, please write to us. I really would like to find out the calligrapher for this particular calligraphy text on this work. So on top of all these photocopied images and texts, Wang Youshen drew a hat as a symbol of himself.
Right, so he's inserted himself into that work.
It could be it is a representation of himself, or it could be a representation of, you know, a human or Chinese in general.
Right. So it's interesting. So we've got two artists working in the 80s and early 1990s. Yeah, one Chinese Australian, one from China, both using similar media and similar techniques. I will talk to you more about this in a question a little bit later on, but of course one with the Chinese tradition being referred to within the work, the other referring to a Renaissance figure, and so with that Western tradition as well. I mean, it's interesting. Do both of these individual works fit within the career that both Lindy Lee and Wang Youshen have had to date in terms of the work they were doing, or were they something of outliers?
Actually, both works are their early career works. Literally, both of them produced this work nearly 1 or 2 years when they graduated
So
they are really raw, and I'm always interested in artists' early works that you could see so much possibility and also so much about the trend of the time when they were producing this work.
Mm. Is that in part why you've chosen these two works to discuss in the podcast, because they're representative of the beginning of their respective careers, or is it is it because of the media that they're working with as well?
I think both and more. I have been doing some research on photocopied works in contemporary Chinese art for the last couple of years. I'm interested in the idea of originality through reproduction of works, including photography, which is my main interest, and of course, photocopy work. When I was an art student at Sydney College of the Art, I myself used photocopier to produce works, particularly for my final grad show. At the time, Lindy Lee actually was my supervisor.
Yes.
However, it is only after years I graduated that I learned that Lindy produced a series of photocopy work when she was an honor student at SCA in the mid-1980s. And her works here was produced immediately after she graduated from SCA using a Canon photocopier she bought secondhand at the time.
Yeah.
I find it so uncanny that we used the same medium in our student years.
And that you were unaware that she had done this.
I know. I got no idea of these works when I was her student. And I don't remember she mentioned it to me at all when I'm producing works using photocopier. Or maybe I just forgot about it. It was 15 years ago. For Wang Youxin's work, it was exhibited in the 1990 Sydney Spring Festival at the Art Gallery of New South Wales. He was invited, together with another two Beijing artists, Arsian and Liu Xiaoxian, to join this festival. It's Arsian and Liu Xiaoxian, as people who are familiar with the Chinese-Australian artist circle, they migrated to Sydney after the exhibition.
Oh, right.
Yeah. However, Wang Youxin decided to go back to Beijing. He thought China is the place for him to continue his artistic practice. I'm amazed by the different choices by artists during historical time. He nearly became one of our Chinese-Australian artists if, you know, he decided to stay. So I find that all these coincidences, both in my life or both in, you know, in a historical sense, really fascinate me. And I could find this type of uncanny coincidence in both of the works. So I think personally, or even sort of in terms of my research, they both really speak to me a lot.
Excellent. I'm going to come back and talk to you about that relationship about the work speaking to you as well. But it's really interesting. I mean, when he returned to Beijing, did he continue to work with photocopying art, or did he begin to bring in other media as well?
Wang Youxin did probably 1 or 2 years using photocopiers to produce quite sort of a little bit like an artist book, but we don't call it artist book. It's such a sort of Euro-American tradition. It's really like a booklet, a traditional Chinese booklet format using photocopier. But really soon that he abandoned photocopier or the technique of photocopying and mainly use a lot of photography image, particularly analog photography, and also using media, for example, newspapers in his installation. Because aside being an artist, officially he was the artistic editor for the Beijing Youth Daily, so for a newspaper.
Yes.
So the circulation of media, the production of public discourse really interested him. So after, from early 1990s, he sort of went off to do a lot of work related to analog photography as well as media.
Right.
And for Lindy Lee, as we all know, that she told me in our conversation, after her secondhand Canon photocopier broke in early 90s, she did not produce any photocopy works anymore. But quite similar with Wang Youxin, she used photography as well, mainly family album, to question identity politics.
I mean, it's interesting that could you expand a little bit upon the role of the photocopier in art? Was that very much a tool being used of its time, of the 80s and 90s? And, given that we all very rarely use photocopiers now compared to, a few years ago, but, is there a broader tradition of artists actually using a photocopier as a resource for creating?
You were really right about sort of in the 80s. There was a global trend of using photocopier, using photocopy machine in art practice. However, as early as the 60s and 70s in cosmopolitan cities such as New York and London, a lot of avant-garde artists, they already used photocopy machine to produce work. But in the 80s, there were more in Australia, in China, in Japan's artists picked it up as well. And I think that was, you know, between 60s and 80s is quite an important time in art history, that sort of like the late modernist period and also transitioning to post-modernism. Mm,
yes.
And within this time that artists were extremely experimental,
yeah,
in using different media. Photocopier definitely was one of the tools being used to do experiment. You know, nowadays it is so common in our office at home as well. But between 60s and 80s, the technique,
yeah,
the technology of photocopying was really new.
Yes.
And to using the latest technology to produce artwork was, you know, quite a trend at the time. Back to the Australian context, Lindsay Lee at the time, as I mentioned, she was an honor student in SCA, and she started using the photocopier in the library of Sydney College of the Arts,
mm,
together with her fellow artists such as Ross Gibson, Sam Mell, Mark Thurkell, and Mark Tickmarsh. They, using the same photocopier, to produce the first couple of issues of the cultural history magazine On the Beach.
Yes.
Yeah. And Lindsay, at the time, she used the photocopier to do like design for the magazine. But later that she gradually, you know, bought her secondhand photocopier and used it to produce a series of work photocopying all these really famous paintings of Renaissance artists, and they are all sort of big names in Western art history. For Wang Youshen, he was an art student at the Central Academy of Fine Arts, although his major was more like the Lianhonghua department, which is the serial pictures department. It's more sort of using a lot of printmaking technique at the time. But again, he used the photocopier in the library of Central Academy of Fine Arts and started producing his early photocopy work from mid-80s. And at the time that in China, you need to be trained to use a photocopier.
Yes.
So he could not use the photocopier himself. He had to pay the special librarian to do the photocopy for him under his instruction. And the whole area, I'm sure probably it would be similar in you know, in Australia, or
yeah,
probably in Europe and America. In the early days, the photocopy area was such a high technology place,
yes,
and you would have,
yes,
fans, like,
yeah,
there would be fans around that,
yes,
you, only people have special
access
training could access to it.
It's extraordinary, though, actually, isn't it? In both cases, I kind of also have a middle picture of lines of students standing behind waiting for them to, you know, just do photocopying. But, yeah, because we talked a bit about the technology becoming far more common, and obviously within a Western context, that makes sense. But I imagine in the 80s, the number of photocopies going into mainland China was probably relatively small scale at that point in time as well, too. So that must have been really difficult for him to actually translate what he wanted from a creative process through a technician doing the actual work for him.
You're absolutely right about it. At the time that I think only Xerox and Canon were imported to,
right,
China,
yeah,
and from the 60s, China already started copying Canon. Like, they have a production line trying to copy Canon. But I think eventually, particularly in the 80s, most photocopiers were used in, for example, research institution or library, university. They were imported mainly from Japan.
Yeah.
And Wang Youshen, and the things that, you know, that's why I'm really interested in cultural networks, in art production, because when I'm talking about cultural networks, that, you know, to be friend with the technician of the library who could use photocopier was really important if you want to, you know. So it happens that the technician or whoever that who looked after the photocopier in Kaffa's library at the time was Wang Youshen's best friend's girlfriend.
Right,
so, right. You know, this is, you know, the whole question of how to access to a photocopier, you know, in those days was really important.
Yeah, fascinating. Now, we both alluded to it earlier, but and you certainly described both of the works, but we mentioned that both of these works reflect some degree of historical tradition in both Eastern and Western. So Lee with the copy of the portrait of Messina, and with Youshen's work that are based upon those Tang Dynasty drawings, those line drawings. Why did both artists, you know, use what was contemporary, relatively cutting edge technology to look back at the past?
I think we are coming from our past, right? So it's important to look back to know who you are, where you're from, and where you're going to. And that's why, you know, historical thinking is really important in, for any society. For Wang Youshen and for Lindy Lee, despite that they had really, really different motivation in producing these works, I think looking back to their, you know, relevant history that gave them a sense of the current of who they were at the time in the 80s and in 1990s. Lindy started making photocopy works based on these well-known Renaissance portraits, actually rather than exploring European art history. She was searching for a longing. She once said to me, when I was copying, I was using this and that, trying on the clothing of that person, believing that system and experience to see if it fit. She was seriously interrogating originality, copying, and authenticity in her subsequent photocopy work, incorporating, you know, photocopier into a mixed media practice. She was quite a high example of appropriation art at the time, freshly graduated from SCA. Her photocopy works were really quickly picked up by state gallery curators such as Nick Waterlow for the 1986 Biennale of Sydney.
Yes.
Origins, Originality Plus Beyond.
Yeah.
The work I choose here also represented Australian art in the exhibition Edge to Edge, Australian Contemporary Art to Japan, for Australia's bicentenary in 1988. So for Lindy, that was, for her, it was a journey of searching from the Western past in art history.
Yeah.
But for Wang Youshen, using this line drawing of this Tang Dynasty script found in the library in the Dunhuang Grottoes meant a lot to him as a serial picture student, because for them, that they believe that's the origin of serial pictures, which like is a little bit like a comic strip.
Yes.
It's quite a popular format since early 20th century in China.
Yeah.
So he was searching not just the past of China, but the past of his own artistic practice. And I said at the beginning that the hat that he drew there that could symbolize himself to searching, you know, his artistic practice, and also generally as Chinese history. And I forgot to mention that you could see there is like a blank sticker on the image, which is typically used in archives. I'm not sure whether in here, that probably it's quite an old tradition that to use this type of sticker to write sort of like the registration number for the books the archival documents. Wang Youshen deliberately left it empty there. I think it's quite a gesture to question the history itself, the history making, also whether, you know, whose history, who's making it for whom. So for both Wang Youshen and Lindy Lee, it was the stage of their life freshly out of art school to search about themselves and about their artistic practice.
Oh, fascinating. Now, could you tell our listeners a bit about how both works came to be in the collection of the Chow Chak Wing Museum?
For Lindy Lee's work, it is part of the Power Collection.
Yeah.
And this work actually will be featured in the upcoming exhibition Light and Darkness,
yes,
curated by our senior curator and Stephen and assistant curator Katrina Liberio, which will open around August and September.
September,
yes. Yeah. And for Wang Youshen's work, Portrait Series, Document 1, as I mentioned, it was first exhibited in Sydney, in the Sydney Spring Festival in Art Gallery New South Wales in 1990. However, it was entered our collection in 2001. It's still a mystery for me to find out how it came into our collection.
You're listening to Object Matters, the podcast of the Chow Chak Wing Museum. My name's Craig Barker, and my guest this episode is Dr. Susha Shen. Susha, look, we've talked a little bit already about how you personally respond to the works and what the works mean to you as well, but do you find yourself responding to both works differently each time you see them, or is it sort of something that you've set in your mind in terms of how you react to both of these creative pieces?
I think they are responding to me quite differently. Like, you know, my background, you know, with my Chinese heritage and also my academic background as an art historian, then both images, early Renaissance painting or the Tang Dynasty line painting, they both sort of capture different tradition, and this tradition sort of responding to them quite differently but yet quite complexly. As I mentioned that, you know, I came here as an overseas student at Sydney College of Art to study creative art, but yet I've been sort of living in Sydney for more than 15 years. So I feel like as an immigrant, my ethnicity sort of shift a little bit during these 15 years. I have this process of keeping my own Chinese heritage and at the same time that I'm exploring, you know, different values within a new country. Mm. And I think Lindy's work responds to me a lot in terms of this sort of, you know, as, you know, a process of searching a belonging. I think I have been doing so in the
yes,
past 15 years.
Yes.
And then Wang Youshen's work sort of give me a confirmation of where I am from, what is my heritage tradition. So that sort of give me a departing point.
Yes, right.
So both these two works really sort of responding to me, you know, as a new migrant in this new continent in my life.
Mm. No, that's beautiful. That sense of it's a really lovely response.
Oh, thank you. I haven't thought about it.
Well, I guess this is the question I'm asking everyone who appears on the podcast, some people are enjoying it and some people are hating it.
I am hating it already.
So in one word, in one word, what do these works signify for you? I guess given you've got two works, maybe you can have two words, but, just if you could, in one word, what do these works mean?
You are generous. I have two words.
Two words.
Okay, it is quite difficult for me, as I mentioned to you, that I was struggling just to write abstract for my PhD. I can't summarize things properly. I think for those two words, what they are signifying is the, I think probably identity.
Yeah.
That means, you know, an identity as a self, as an early career artist. And both of them were searching where they're heading to as a person and as an artist as well. So this identity could be quite artistic identity.
Yes,
that
yes,
is a time that they're exploring their work using photocopier as a medium
yeah,
at that time. But then, you know, both of them really straight away abandon photocopier and move on to other things. And another identity, it would be like ethnic identity for Lindy Lee. Yeah. And for Wang Youshen, it is this identity as being a Chinese, how to responding to different traditions,
yes,
through, you know, the Tang Dynasty line drawing.
Well, I guess moving from the works now to the final questions, could you talk a bit about the exhibition which is currently on in the Chao Chek Ming Museum, which you've curated, which is called Auspicious? What is the message in that exhibition? What do you want our listeners to see when they come in to visit the Chao Chek Ming Museum in that space?
Yeah, the exhibition currently in China Gallery titled Auspicious Motifs in Chinese Art, it explores the themes of fortune, prosperity and virtue that have long inspired the art of China. However, it's not just accumulation of all these lucky signs. Auspicious is a word that articulates a very complex, dynamic view of positive forces in Chinese culture. The exhibition draws from three local collections, from the university art collections, from our own Chao Chek Ming Museum, the Art Gallery of New South Wales, the Powerhouse Museum. This exhibition tries to denote the complexity of a very ubiquitous word in Chinese culture or in Chinese life. It presents a wide range of symbols through over 60 carefully selected objects. It includes everyday objects such as bowls, vases, religious sculptures, such as different representations of Taoist gods and the Buddha, architectural elements such as roof figures of mythical creatures, books, rare books telling the stories of the Confucius. The material of the objects is also very diverse. You could see a double happiness wedding hat ornament made of kingfisher feather, a bronze mirror showing the most primitive perception of the cosmos in Chinese culture, or silver tea set for the European market, however, with dragon and bamboo motifs. Mm. The exhibition is full of ideas through the richness of the functionality and the materiality of the object. However, the exhibition design itself is allowing the audience to enjoy the objects in a very contemporary, clean, and even really serene space.
Yep.
So I'm hoping that the objects, they speak for themselves as well.
Yeah, fantastic. It's a beautiful exhibition.
Thank you.
I guess this is also a good time, if we're talking, you know, auspicious fortunes. As we record and release this podcast, it is the Lunar New Year. We are entering into the Year of the Ox. Is there anything you'd like to say to our listeners to wish them the very best for the Year of the Ox?
Yes, indeed. It's quite a good time coinciding the new Lunar New Year, the Year of the Ox. Here, I wish everyone has a brand new Year of Ox, and I'm going to speak in Mandarin and Cantonese to wish our Chinese community a really fortune year.
恭喜发财，恭祝大家牛气冲天，恭喜发财，恭祝大家牛年行好运。
Thank you.
What a brilliant way to end the podcast. Thank you very much for joining us, Susha. Thank you for sharing your knowledge, your research, and these two really exciting works in the collection. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Craig, for having me.
Object Matters is recorded on the grounds of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation. The Chao Chek Ming Museum and the University of Sydney acknowledge the traditional owners, and we pay our respect to elders past, present and emerging. Subscribe to Object Matters on your favourite podcast app and connect with the Chao Chek Ming Museum on Instagram, Twitter and Facebook. You can also subscribe to our monthly e-newsletter
News Extra via our website, sydney.edu.au/museum.